Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host for a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce you Judge, Doctor, and Chief Joel Schultz. You can get a hold of him at schultzco@gmail.com. He's all over LinkedIn. Look, we were covering stuff a decade ago when we first started the show, and he was running for Police One, which he still does, but he's got a lot of great stuff out there. So I suspect that most people watching this show have heard of Chief Joel Schultz, and yeah, we have him live today. So thanks for so much for being on the show, Chief. Appreciate it. A shout out to our sponsors. You know, we have our title sponsor, Gauls at Gauls.com, and don't forget, they've given us that discount code, which I'm getting ready to give to you. It's easy to remember, but don't forget it, because you've always got 15% off with Gauls with it. It's Radio 15. So remember, Radio 15. Next time you go to Gauls.com, we have ComplyTechnologies.com, our satellite sponsor, GunLearn.com, MyMedicare.life, and TubeBells.com. They built our new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. A shout out to Brian Burns for the free press at TampaFP.com, Ray Dietrich, former lawman.com, and Travis Yates with LawOfficer.com. Thanks for helping make this show happen. And guys, if you're trying to find the show, we're on every podcast platform known to man, including Spotify and Apple iTunes, two of the largest. And also we're on social media, Rumble, YouTube, Facebook, X formerly Twitter, Truth Social. The list goes on and on. The best way to find our show, because we're on radio primarily, 47 radio stations around the country, TV, podcast, social media, go to our website, leoroundtable.com. In the top menu bar, we'll list all the outlets that we're on. If it's like a radio station or something that's date and time sensitive, it'll tell you what those dates are. It has links to be able to get to those sources to watch the show. We just have a full list of ways that you can watch the show. And let me go into what the appetite and what the world we're going to be talking about today. We have some pretty interesting topics. You know, normally when the chief is on, we have some deeper topics because he can handle that. And so, yeah, our first two are pretty, you know, it's not to take a slam on former, you know, police chiefs, but, you know, it's kind of like where these are going. So we've got the first article from justice.gov. We're going to talk about it in a minute. We have four former Oakdale area law enforcement leaders and one business owner. They plead guilty to falsifying police reports and bribery to perpetuate a decade-long visa fraud conspiracy. I can't believe the people involved in this were involved in this. It's just really shocking. But we're going to cover that. It is surprising, even for me. Then we've got a chief of police for the Southeast Missouri State University at a university. He's charged for allegedly cheating during post-exam. And he didn't really defend himself very well. We've got Houston police officers fatally shooting a guy in response to him pointing a gun at a woman. We've got body cam showing a suspect being injured in a shootout during a foot chase. Then we're going to jump over Florida's fight over online speech heats up as tech groups are taking aim at social media law. You may find that interesting. I think the chief will. Idaho Falls police officer fatally shot a domestic disturbance suspect when he grabs a large knife. So assuming that we have time to get to all those, that's the lineup. Chief, I don't know if you want to take anything out of order or not. If it's okay with you, I'd like to start off with the Oakdale, California guys and see what happens after that.
Well, yeah, since it's roasting police chiefs day, you go right ahead.
At least none of them are university or college. Oh, that's right. Second story.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. No, these, yeah. Let's dive into that, because the ethics of this is indefensible.
Yeah, I got to admit, I'm looking at the title and we're getting ready to cover this, and I still can't believe it. So we're in Alexandria. Again, this is justice.gov. So it's coming from a government, you know, authentic website. And I found it originally from another source, but I want to make sure I was getting credible information. So four former Oakdale area law enforcement leaders and one business owner, they pled guilty to falsifying police reports and bribery to perpetuate the decade-long visa fraud conspiracy. And I actually learned something about how this whole visa thing works. So on June the 30th, 2026, Forest Hill Police Chief Glenn Dixon, he's 62 years old, he pled guilty in federal court to his role in a decade-long scheme involving bribery and a conspiracy to commit visa fraud and also mail fraud. That jacks up the term after his four co-conspirators, business owner, were involved in this. So he pled guilty in this decades long thing, and he was the last one to plead guilty. His four co-conspirators, business owner, Chandrik Patel, 40 years old, of Oakdale. We also have the Oakdale police chief, Chad Dole, 55 years old, involved in this. Oakdale police marshal, Michael Slaney, for Ward 5. He's 64 years old. He pled. And also Glenmora police chief, Thibaut Onishia, 38 years old. He pled guilty to the same. They all pled to the same charges in recent weeks. Now, the defendants were originally indicted back on July the 2nd, so a year ago. And Dixon, Doyle, Onishia, and Slaley, they each face up to 5 years in prison. And Patel, the business owner, faces up to 20 years in federal prison. So, yeah, he's getting a little bit jacked up a little bit more. So what in the world happened? Here we go. The case involves the abuse of, they call it U non-immigrant status, or they're called U visas. Now, Congress created the U visa with the passage of the Victims of Trafficking and Violence Protection Act, and they did that back in the year 2000. So foreign nationals, they are eligible for this U visa if they meet certain criteria. And that's where the story gets really interesting. If they were a victim of qualifying criminal activity, that's part of the criteria, that occurred in or violated laws of the United States, or if they possessed information about that same type of criminal activity. So according to the court documents, the defendants, now remember, these are police chiefs and police administrators, the defendants engaged in U visa fraud all the way back in December of 2015 through July 2025. And I suspect that it only ended in 2025 when they wrapped up the investigation, or else it would still be going on. So think about that. This is 2026. It started in 2025, over 10 years ago. And they were fabricating police reports that falsely documented armed robberies that never happened. And then they provided these fictitious, fake, false reports to non-citizens who used them to support fraudulent U visa applications. Now, these four nationals pursuing that wanted to get the U visas, they would pay Patel, the business owner, thousands of dollars to be named as victims in these fabricated incidents. And then Patel, the business guy, he secured false police reports by coordinating with the defendants, Dole, Slaney, Dixon, and Onishia, each of whom used their positions in law enforcement to certify the fraudulent reports. It's crazy. Court records show that the business owner, Patel, attempted to bribe an agent of the, it's called the Rapids Parish Sheriff's Office, but apparently he was not successful because he tried to bribe him with only $5,000, maybe that was it, back in February of 2025, and he was trying, in that instance, to obtain these kinds of reports. In addition, the defendant submitted falsified documents via U.S. Postal Service and other carriers, constituting additional mail fraud charges. And I'm assuming it was over state lines. These guys are sunk, and I guess that's why they pled guilty. The case was investigated, and this is like a who's who. Homeland Security Investigations, HSI, FBI, the IRS was involved in this, the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services, Fraud Detection and National Security Division, Homeland Security Task Force, Operation Take Back America was the name of this thing. They have U.S. Attorney John Nickel involved, and they also have another one, Danny Sifker, and they have some paralegal specialists involved too. They give credit to a lot of people involved in this. They sound like they did a really jam-up job. Chief Joel Schultz, what you're thinking on this thing?
Well, that's just an indicator of what a mess our immigration system has been for a long time, and much of it is unaddressed. So we obviously have the closing the border, open borders issue that's being addressed. We had number of people that are misusing their immigration status, either their green card or their tourist card or their student visa. And other types of access that starts legitimate and then they overstay. And so that's resulting in the policy for deportation. So we do want to protect everybody in the boundaries of the United States from crime victimization. So in one jurisdiction where I worked, we had a number of Guatemalans who were kind of adopted by charitable organizations in our area during a civil war. And they came up here with you know, with some immigration protections, but not all of them completed the citizenship routine. And if Congress can nail down a more efficient, legitimate way to become a citizen, I think all these workarounds that these folks are trying to do to buy their way in or sneak their way in or fraudulently obtain citizenship rights would kind of be shut down. But this particular visa, if you had an immigrant who was a victim of domestic violence or trafficking or sexual assault or robbery, if they were a crime victim, they would not want to report that, because then that shines the light on them as for their illegal status. And so they would rather take a beating, rather take a sexual assault than to be deported because they were not legally present. So that's the reason for the U visa. And apparently that is a fairly easy process to go through if you have the cooperation of the law enforcement administrators who will sign off reports on, and verify the legitimacy of their victimhood. And it's much quicker and easier and very seldom supervised. So it's worth the $5,000 or $10,000 to bribe somebody to falsify a report and get a fraudulently obtained visa to remain in the United States.
Yeah, that just, even just hearing you say that, crazy, because I normally wouldn't think that. If we had all these law enforcement guys involved, we wouldn't have to check up on it. So, but we are up for our first commercial break, guys. We got a lot more to come. Stick with us. We'll be right back.
My family only cares about one thing, that I come home safe.
At Galls, every order begins with a promise. Made with purpose. Stitched for support. Backed with pride. Answered by dedicated hands. Delivering the standard you have sworn to uphold. We serve more than the mission. We serve the person. Each piece is engineered to help get our first responders through the shift and back home safe.
Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host. And we are joined by Chief Joel Schultz. So thanks for being on the show, Chief. Appreciate it. You know, we have been talking about Oakland and Oakland area police chiefs that got, and a business owner that got kind of caught up in a scam on these visas. Just a horrible story. Not to be outdone by our next story, but any more words on this last one?
Well, just, I appreciate this is coming to light. As I said before, there are so many ways to commit fraud. When I was a campus police chief, we ran into a situation where foreign students were obtaining a student visa and then paying somebody else to actually go to class. So they were not using a student visa to get access to education. They were using it to get access to be on American soil and do whatever they wanted to do. So we got what then we called INS immigration involved. There are a lot of fingers of fraud out there regarding immigration, because everybody in the world except Americans wants to come to America.
Yeah. Go figure. Yeah. Yeah. So they didn't say in this article that I could find what was going to happen to the visa holders or what their status was or their future status. So any inkling on that, since you've dealt with this before at the college university level? Or.
Well, I suspect, you know, they do not have a right to be here if they got here by fraud. So they may be spending the holidays in Venezuela.
Okay. All right. I got no problem with that. And I have no sympathy for the cops, that the bad cops. You know, this really is Trump 2.0 has brought over the new FBI. I love the FBI now. Look at, I mean, I love the fact that they're working nicely with these other federal agencies. They're all working in sync to each other, with each other. You know, you there was a time when, and there still may be some truth to it, but you know, the FBI doesn't always play nice with other agencies, and they can get a little stingy. And I love it when you've got these multiple layers, multiple agencies, and the FBI does have great resources. So I love you know, a 10-year investigation like this. There's nothing easy about it involving one agency, much less all the people involved. They had to keep a lid on it. Apparently they did it. They did it very, very well. And there's some prominent people that have got hooked up in this thing. So yeah, I'm very impressed. Very impressed. So,
you know, HSI is a new kid on the block in terms of federal investigative agencies, and they have such broad jurisdiction and such great resources. So, I'm glad that they all work together. There is a system, a deconfliction system, where you can check in, and it's basically a website with very limited access. But if DEA is working on something, and FBI is working on something, Secret Service is working on something, you don't want one of these class cases where you've got a bunch of undercover people pointing guns at each other because they think that each other is the bad guy.
It happens. You're right.
And so when you see these multi-agency cooperation, and I love it when the criminal investigators from IRS get involved, because they've got some clout too.
Yeah. Well, we'll move it along, if you don't mind, to Missouri. And we've got about 4 minutes here before we take our next break. On krcu.org, we've got the, so it's an acronym, SEMO, which stands for the Southeast Missouri State University. So the SEMO, or Southeast Missouri State University Chief of Police, charged for alleged cheating during post-exam. So, and I'm not trying to purposely slam chiefs. It's just the stories, just the way they come up, you know? Okay, here we go. Chief of Police for the Southeast Missouri State University's campus police, Dr. Richard Flotrin, he ends up being charged on June the 17th with allegations of helping SEMO or College Police Academy students cheat on their Peace Officer Standards and Training, which stands for post exam. Now, I'm trying to wrap my head around the end game. Like, what is the, you know, doesn't talk about money, compensation, stuff like that. So I'm just trying to, but it does talk about him always wanting to go back to that position or be back at the college. So let's go through this, follow the rabbit hole a little further here. So Flotron, our chief that got charged, he got hit with two counts of class D felony for forgery. So think about that. And then two class B misdemeanors for unauthorized use of testing materials. So one class D alone, and he got hit with two of them. A defendant can receive up to 7 years of prison time. And the misdemeanors, they're 6 months in jail each. And so, again, he got hit with two each. So according to the Missouri Department of Public Safety, POST, and remember, that is the Peace Officer Standards and Training Exam, POST is a regulatory program responsible for licensing peace officers as well as licensing law enforcement basic training centers. And they put their credentials on the training centers, the curriculum, the training instructors. They approve all that stuff. And that's pretty much standard, I believe, you know, state to state. Everybody's got their standards and training commission. Now, the probable cause statement says that students who were taking the online post-exam, and so they're saying it was an online exam, but they're also in a classroom. So I'm just trying to, they have computers. So it sounds to me like they're in a classroom setting on computers. And they're doing this, technically it's online, but they're like in a classroom setting is what I suspect. But this guy, Flotron, he's there. They were interviewed and alleged that he altered an exam by changing answers before it was submitted. And others reported overhearing him make comments to students during the exam, including statements like, "Hey, I don't know if I would pick that one." So in the probable cause statement, our bad guy, Flotron, it almost sounds like it's a Marvel character, Flotron. You know, he flies in the air and he shoots flames at your son. But, you know,
or a medication.
Or medication, yeah. He denies giving any answers during the exam. He said he never manually changed any answers on an exam. He claimed that while some cadets asked him for clarification on questions, he never gave away any answers. However, he did say he probably submitted a cadet's test because the student was, quote, scared to submit it himself, unquote. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Maybe you can help me understand that one. Additionally, the statement claims that several cadets, and I know that we're winding it down for the next commercial break, but several cadets came up to him to submit their exam, and they spent an extended amount of time with him, up to 22 minutes. When they asked him why he was with them for that long and with their laptops and stuff, he didn't have a good answer for them. So we're going to stop there. I've only got like one more paragraph before we talk about this, but that's where we're at, guys. Stick around. You don't want to miss this one. We'll be right back. All right, guys, it's time to talk about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. And they are committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in what they call a humane, low-ethics manner, utilizing their CD3. And that stands for Conductive Distraction and De-escalation Device Technology. Now, their flagship product we all know by now is called the Glove. It's not only helped officers tens of thousands of times, but they've actually had over 250,000 deployments. And guess what? No injuries, no deaths. It's an amazing stat. They've actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. When it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm, or a conductive energy weapon, the Glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, they have virtually eliminated weapons confusion. So stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most common sense, hands-on solutions that's ever come along. So go to ComplianTechnologies.com today. Tell them that Chip sent you. Again, ComplianTechnologies.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the law enforcement talk show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Dr. Joel Schultz, retired police chief and judge. So thanks so much for being back on the show, Chief. Appreciate it. We left off talking about it, and we're almost done with this. We're going to have some good dialogue in a second. We're talking about the chief of police for the Southeast Missouri State University campus. It's Dr. Richard Floton, and the title says that he was charged for alleged cheating during post-exam. Now, the POST stands for the Peace Officer Standards and Training Exam. It's like the basically the state training commission that regulates, you know, police officers. They yank certifications, they authorize, you know, the academies, the schools, the instructors, the curriculum, and all that stuff has to go through them. Now, we talked about, you know, what was going on. We have recruits, applicants that are taking tests. They have computers. It sounds to me like they're in a classroom. It said they're doing it online, but it's a classroom setting is what it sounds like. And then after they're done taking the exam, and he's talking to them, answering questions about, you know, the questions. And he said he didn't give any answers, but we have students that are complaining on him. He's with them up to 22 minutes, an extended amount of time when they're going to turn in their work and stuff. And when asked why he had control over the cadets' laptops during that time, he said he didn't give out any answers, hints, or any information to help the student score on the exam other than reframing a question for clarity. But according to the statement, Dr. Floton could not give a good answer on why the cadets were with him for an extended period of time and why he had control of their laptops, which is, you know, could be troublesome. He stated that, or he started at the university back in the summer of 2024, so not that long ago, and the academy had started reporting him about a year later. Now, he is an alumni for the college, and he started his career working as an immigration agent in Detroit, Michigan. Later, he went to the Jefferson County Sheriff's Office, and he was there till 2002, so quite a while ago. And then he started working at the Mineral Area College. And it says that previous reporting from Southeast Aero, it said that he always wanted to go back to the university, which of course is where all this happened at. In fact, within a year, they're complaining on him. According to a press release issued by the Southeast Missouri State University, the one he wanted to go back to, now we've got Captain Jason Morgan is currently serving as the interim police chief. And it, the very last paragraph says that our chief Lotron, or Marvel action character, that his employment with the university has actually been terminated now. So he's done. Chief Schultz.
Well, you know, many post boards are kind of a mess historically. I've dealt with the Missouri Post Board because I was an academy director there. I've dealt with the Colorado Post Board. I was a subject matter expert for their curriculum development, worked on their revised state testing. And, you know, part of the problem is that we don't really have a lot of science. We're getting there, a lot of science to say, here's a question, and this is the answer because of this source. a lot of our testing has in anything other than the law statutes, a lot of our testing about police procedure has been based on what we've always done. And now we have this last, you know, 5 or 10 years of major, 15 years of major research, you know, that Travis Yates been involved in, and for science, Vaughn has been involved in. So the testing process is kind of questionable to begin with, but I will say this, and I know this because I had to retest in Missouri when I had left Missouri, went to Colorado, got certified in Colorado, came back to Missouri to get recertified. The tests are not that hard. I can't imagine that you would need to cheat. If you need to cheat to pass these tests, you should not be a police. It's that simple. And with all of these regulatory bodies, with post bodies, I've also had some interaction with California Post as well. Spent a few days with them talking about their technology. You can't run an organization on trust. You have to trust, but test, trust, but verify, trust, but inspect, trust and review. So somebody must have snitched on the chief here to see this pattern of something that's not right. Probably a straight A Academy student who was doing the right thing in the right way with the, you know, taking the test the way they're supposed to. And they're seeing some of these other guys or gals that are getting some kind of, you know, favoritism. And the reality is, if you're in the police academy and some knucklehead is not performing very well, and they're going to be a C-level police officer, you might have your life depending on that C-level police officer, right? I mean, it's like the old joke about doctors. What do you call the person who graduates last in their medical class? You call them doctor. You know, there's always somebody on the range of things. So, and he, you know, this officer is now imperiled for testimony. He's going to be on a Brady list if anybody questions his veracity, implicated with cheating. Now, you remember, I started years ago and was actually grandfathered and exempt from going to any police academy when I started back in 1978 in Missouri. The only agencies that had to have academy training were the large agencies, and they all had state supervision. So when I went to the academy, which was just a 3-week academy, I had one instructor who would bang on the, you know, subtly bang on the pulpit, on the speaker stand when he came across something that he knew was going to be on the test, right? So okay, yeah. We didn't have to learn everything. We just had to learn what he tapped out. and so I'm glad that Missouri Post, and I'll just say another snippet here. I was a reserve officer with an agency who will not be named. And I was checking my records with the state portal here in Colorado to see how much time I had before I could finish my continuing education, which is a requirement in Colorado. It's very minimal, but it's a requirement. And I noticed that I had passed all of the continuing education requirements. Well, I hadn't. Somebody from that agency had pencil whipped it and just entered the fact that I passed that. And you know, how to audit those things and how to bring those to light, it is a real challenge for agencies. And in the age of computers, man, I could tell you some other stories. In the age of computers, you have to have a way. If you're going to be online, you have to have a way of monitoring what's going on that laptop, whether it's a video screen or whether it's a blocking out of everything but the test on the computer, so you can't, you know, go back and look it up. So this, I hope that this is a warning sign for other academy administrators to know that they're being watched. And yes, you do get credit for, you know, you'd like to brag. We have 100% placement. We have 100% of people who pass the post exam. You know, we've been audited and we have good performance on our testing. Those are things that can get measured and can be bragging points, particularly for academies that are self-sponsored, right? So in a lot of states, Colorado's one, Missouri's one, California is a little bit, but not very much. A lot of people that want to be cops will pay for their own training and go through a police academy at a community college or a four-year college. It is actually SEMO's university in Cape Girardeau, by the way, down south west Missouri. So the academies are making tuition dollars off of students, and then they'll get hired. They can say, I've got a license, just like nurses do. Nurses go get their own training and then they go get hired. So that's the way it is for self-sponsored academy students. So there are money incentives to get those students attracted and to see that they perform well and to see that you retain them. So there's some red flags and flaws in the system that all these agencies need to monitor. And now I'm going to question the certification of every officer that came out of that police academy. If I were a defense attorney, I'd say, well, did you graduate from such academy, and weren't they shut down because of cheating scandal? And it could have a lot of ripple effects throughout the law enforcement community.
Yeah, it's scary. I've seen, retiring from law enforcement, get involved even in the PI realm, and going through some, I'm not going to get too specific, but going through some, let's just say I went through some mandatory training, and the instructor was not my race. And there was a female that was the same race as him that was having a lot of difficulty. And I'll tell you what I witnessed and ultimately ended up reporting. And I don't know that anything happened to him, but it was horrid. It was horrid. She just, oh my gosh, it was just, she just couldn't get anything right on the exam, but she passed with flying colors. But we're 13 seconds out. So I'm going to go in and start our music, Chief. We're going in one more time. So we'll see you on the other side. Here we go. Commercial break. All right, guys, it's time to talk about GunLearn at GunLearn.com. And hey, there have been some changes with GunLearn. So if you haven't heard lately, you may want to pay attention. And GunLearn, for starters, they're the first and they're the only company that offers a step-by-step program that takes you from your present knowledge level to become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist. Now, the certification we're talking about, even if you got it 5 years ago, now it's worth college credits. Why? It's because GunLearn.com, they partnered with Smarter Degree and their university partners in order to pull that off. So again, that certified firearm specialist degree, now it's worth college credits. And they've been doing this back since 1996. They've been teaching everything that LEOs, which is law enforcement officers, need to know about firearms and ammunition to all facets of law enforcement. Now, you can actually start today with online training, or you can sign up to attend a live seminar, and you can even get free training for yourself and all the personnel of your agency by hosting a seminar for absolutely no cost. Go to GunLearn.com to get more information. GunLearn.com. Welcome back. Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com, the Law Enforcement Talk Show. My name is Chip the Block, and I'm your host. We're joined by Chief Joel Schultz, all the way from Colorado. And Chief, it's time to talk about a story with a video component. Do you have a preference? I mean, we've got three to choose from. We've got the Houston one, and the bad guy that points the gun at the woman, and you had mentioned a DV one, and we've got the shootout during the foot chase. And any preference?
No, they're all good. Whatever suits you.
All right. Well, we'll start off with the. I tried to put them in the order of sensationalism. So let me go with the Houston one here. Rumble.com, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. Houston police officers fatally shoot a guy, a man, in response to him pointing a gun at a woman.
Hey, bro. Hey, let me see your fucking hands. Let me see your hands. I got one at gunpoint. Let me see your hands. Let me see your hands. Let me see your hands. Stop. Let me see your hands. 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 14-24, I got shots fired. The officers are okay. Roll additional units. Suspect is still moving. Let me see your hands. Let me see your hands. Hands. Let me see your hands. Let me see your hands. Let me see your hands. Hands, hands. Let me see your hands. Hey, hold coverage. Hold coverage. Go, go, go. Hold coverage.
Yeah.
Hold coverage. Hey. Hey, stop. Let me see your hand.
Hey, he's still moving.
Hey, stop. On me.
Hey, stop moving. Stop.
Hey, I got radio.
Yeah.
Sir, let me see your hands.
And so we're in Houston, Texas. So the Houston department or police department said that the suspect is dead following a shooting in Southeast Houston. And it happened the morning after Christmas. So the shooting happened at the Cityscape Apartments just after 1:30 in the morning. So it's late and it's dark. According to the police, someone called thinking that her car had been hit in the parking lot. And when she goes outside, she sees this guy standing in front of her tan SUV, and he is allegedly pointing a handgun at her. So the woman calls police. The officers get there, and they locate the guy outside the gate. And the man, who is in his 50s, he automatically off the bat does not comply with the officer's commands, and he leads to three officers opening fire and hitting the guy. But they're leaving out some details. Is that there were multiple weapons inside the guy's car? It's unclear if he lived at the complex or not. So let's go to my show notes, which are going to explain a little bit more. When you start watching, and it's right at the beginning, at the 10-second mark, the officer approaches the suspect in the vehicle after a report that he pointed the firearm at the female. And shots are fired just 20 seconds later, the 29-second mark, after he refuses to comply, repeated commands to show his hands. At the 1 minute and 12-second mark, more shots are fired after more officers arrive and the suspect makes movements. And it's hard to see in the beginning of the video, but you can finally see at 3 minutes and 57 seconds, you can actually see the gun in the vehicle. And that's actually the best portion of the video. So for a lot of the video, the guy's sitting in the car and uncooperative with the cop. And then you start seeing this cop start blowing holes through the windshield of the vehicle and walking around to the side. And then we got more of the cavalry showing up, and the cops, I didn't see a crossfire situation, at least initially, Chief, because, you know, the other guy was standing at the hood area. He was more on the driver's side, and first arriving cop moves over to the passenger side, but they're both in front of the vehicle. But they do have a second round of unloading on the guy. I don't know what he was thinking. I mean, at any point he could have cooperated. And even after the first string of gunfire where the bullets were going, through the, it looked like they went through the driver's window and the windshield, almost certainly should have been devastating, but he looked like he was relatively, still with it. I mean, but he wasn't complying. What were your thoughts, Chief?
You know, almost all of these things that we look at are in the eyes of the officer who deals with these kind of calls every day. They're not expecting a shootout. Very seldom does an officer go into a situation and say, well, this is going to be a shootout. But at some level, you have to go into every situation thinking, what can I do to best prevent, being attacked? First of all, these guys did, it was a happy ending, and I don't want to be hypercritical, and I wasn't there. So I'm not going to be too critical, but I have some questions. I wonder why the initial contacting officer put themselves in the vulnerable position of walking up to a man with a gun call without any barrier in between. So, and I'm also, again, in 2020 hindsight, and I certainly may not have done anything differently, but I'm a fan of making commands from a PA. And I don't know if that's a lost art, if anybody does that anymore, but, pull up behind somebody, stay in the relative protection of a vehicle and make a command and see what kind of reaction you're going to get. I think a civilian might look at this person inside the car with the windows rolled up and say, well, you're not... The officer's not at risk because this guy's in his car. We are just now, within the last few years, realizing that shooting through windows. We used to think, of course, back when we were carrying, 38 hollow points, no, bullets bounce off of windshields and bounce off of cars. Well, we're now learning, and maybe even some departments are teaching, you can acquire a target and shoot through a vehicle window or door. So what I'm saying is, if there's a belief that the person inside a car is armed, you're not safe just because they're enclosed by glass. So you're still vulnerable.
Got it.
I was worried about the crossfire as well when the other two officers come up. And I, I don't know what information they had. I didn't hear any particular instruction for the first officer on the scene, who was like eerily calm. Just very, very interesting, very, very, very calm. But no instruction about how to deploy or how to come in until it was time to reposition the vehicle. But they were very vulnerable, had to cross, you know, some open space to get to this armed suspect. And they triangulated well, so I don't think there was crossfire. But unless you're shooting on a range or, you know, very close up, you've got to have some thought about what's the danger of a bullet not traveling exactly the angles we expect to. So bullets can bounce off, they can ricochet, fragments can go one way or the other. So all these officers were vulnerable all of the time. And so I'm glad that that the bad guy, you know, was taken out. Let me put my glasses on and look at my notes. I guess the other thing that I would, you know, that we need to consider, three officers that I saw open fire on this guy. And ideally, every officer that decides to pull the trigger does so based on their own information. There is a tendency or I would say an accusation of people that are, you know, doing postmortems on these shootings to say, oh, you just shot because this guy shot because this guy shot. And it was like a chain reaction, but they really have to make their own decision about whether they're at risk or not. So you may have several officers. I know one situation in a department I used to work with very closely. They had six officers. A guy comes out of a room with a knife, and three of them shot and three of them didn't. So we can't criticize the three for not shooting, because you have to make that decision based on your own, you know, your own observation, what you see and what you know at the moment. Knowing that another officer is shooting is a clue. So you can't X that out of the whole formula. But I also, this first officer, you know, I don't know if that verbiage to hold coverage and on me and stack up, that's not universal police language. It may be the language that's used within the Houston PD. But if you've got these little colloquialisms, particularly if you've ever worked with an officer that comes from another department and they have different terms for different tactical maneuvers, make sure that everybody has the right vocabulary. And I'm sure they did, because the officers followed the direction of the first officer. And the first officer was very aware of the heightened adrenaline and worried about his other officer, you know, staying calm, make a decision, lowering the stress level. So I thought that was a very interestingly and for the most part, well-managed scene.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people that aren't really used, they don't watch hundreds or thousands of these like we do. And so they don't understand that with a body cam, you don't really get everything that you get if you're the officer. Even an experienced officer watching a body cam, you're there's things you're just simply going to miss. And only if you watch it on replay or slow motion that you're going to pick up on something. There's just a huge advantage with it being your set of eyes and being first person. Even the body cams they can't see what the eye can see. And that was important on this one, because the guy's in a car and you couldn't really see it till the end of the video where the gun was at, because the eyes are much higher than where the body cam is at. So the threat was there. It was perceived by the officer, but not perceived on body cam, you know, so little things like that. So,
the officer may not realize that what he's perceiving at a conscious level, you know, his experiences, observations, the sensory inputs, he might not be consciously aware of it, but that's part of the decision-making process that we have a hard time analyzing.
Well, Chief Schultz, you've another superb job. Thank you so much for being on the show today. And I hope you have a great 4th of July, as I do everybody that's watching the show. I do want to mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Lieutenant Rennie Sutton's 501c3, helping cops out in the world of hurt. Guys, please support our sponsors also. They go to great lengths to bring the show to you. We've got our title sponsor, Galls, at galls.com. Don't forget that discount code, radio15, compliantechnologies.com, gunlearn.com, mymedicare.live, twobells.com. We will see you guys back Monday, 12 noon Eastern. Have a safe 4th of July.